You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
We're at the point of the season with about 6 weeks left to go where teams pretty much know if they're contenders or if they're not contenders. I am Allison Sutter. Let's look at the AL West and NL West. A lot of teams that are actually contending for division spots and wildcard spots. So let's talk to our reporters about that. Barry, you were listening to Dave Roberts give an update on what's going on. It sounds like there's some good news about Kershaw and where he might be in his recovery. So why don't you give us an update on that?
Dave basically said that Kershaw's expected to rejoin the team this weekend in Cincinnati and throw a light bullpen off the mound just to see where he is. He says that Kershaw with that this problem in his back is pain-free at the moment, and there's no timetable yet for when he might return. They're, you know, optimistically hoping for September 1st, or, you know, towards the early part of September. Also having to build up his arm again. The minor league season ends at the end of August. Whether he's going to be able to get any reps, who knows. He's saying that optimistically he's hoping that Kershaw might get in two or three more starts before the end of the season, but all of it's conjecture right now until Kershaw gets on the mound.
And what about some of the other pitchers? Ryu and McCarthy, this doesn't sound really great for Ryu.
Yeah, Ryu, he said there's an elbow issue to go along now with shoulder issue. He said he hasn't picked up a baseball since his last start, which was, you know, months ago already. And I teased him and said, well, come on, you can't actually say he didn't pick up a baseball. I mean, at some point, you know, he probably had one in his hand, and we had a good laugh about that. But, you know, to his point, Ryu's probably not going to pitch for the rest of the season as he works through rehab and gets himself back to a point where, you know, he can pitch. And that would be 2 years out for Ryu at this point. So who knows whether he'll ever be back. I would think that his career is really in doubt at this point. And, you know, you have Wood coming back from elbow problems. He had some surgery to take pregnancy out of the elbow. Robert said he's hopeful that he'll be back by the middle of September or so and working out of the bullpen. I mean, really, in his mind's eye, you know, you look at it, and it is kind of the way I'm going to frame a column tonight is that, you know, they're in first place. They have 9 games to go against the Giants. The Giants have really helped them by going 9-21 since the All-Star break and allowing them to get back in it with all the chronic starting pitching problems they've had. And their bullpen has kept them in it, much like the Orioles' bullpen has kept them in it with a paucity of starting pitching. And how long that'll be able to go is only a question here. You know, he's viewing, you know, at some point, you have Rich Hill down in the minors now, maybe a rehab start, coming back from a chronic blister problem, which has kept him out for a while above Oakland here. But in his mind's eye, you're looking at maybe by the time the season ends, you know, Kershaw, Hill, Maeda, and Kazmir, and then filling in, you know, need a fifth spot when you get to the playoffs. So, you know, if they can maintain and then get all these guys back, they might be in pretty good condition when you get to the postseason.
Yeah, you know, with all the doom and gloom that came out and everything that you're saying, this all is making sense, but just when Kershaw went down and then the Dodgers started surging, I mean, yes, one of the reasons is just because the Giants have been terrible and they were able to catch them. But, you know, when I look at this lineup, I mean, well, Adrian Gonzalez has absolutely heated up, and that is a huge reason why. I mean, he's really been such an anchor for them. And Corey Seager, I mean, probably the runaway candidate for the Rookie of the Year. There's a lot that's going – you can mask a lot when you have a lineup that's
terrific,
scoring.
To your point. Adding Josh Riddick and shedding himself a league and sending him down to the minors, I think made a big difference. You know, their offense has been working on a lot of cylinders at this point. And when you go up against a team like the Phillies where, you know, their pitching has been problematic all year, if you have a good offense, it could really feast. So, you know, that's probably going to continue, especially going into Cincinnati this weekend. It's another starting rotation that has been in real flux for well over a year since they traded Cueto, and Homer Bailey was on the disabled list coming back with Tommy John. They traded Leake. So, I mean, they don't have a composite pitching staff of veteran people. It's all rookies, and that's the way it's been since last August. So the Dodgers should be able to feast on that. And then they go into a home series, a three-game series at Dodger Stadium against the Giants next week, which will be crucial for both teams, even though it's still August.
You can't really say enough about Corey Seager either. I mean, it's one thing to try to acclimate yourself into Major League Baseball. It's another thing to do it in a market like Los Angeles and a team like the Dodgers, and there's so much scrutiny. And he seems to have a great head on his shoulders.
He's a nice kid. I just talked to him before they went out on the field. It's the baseball family. You know, his brothers, Kyle, obviously is an all-star third baseman already with Mariners. His brother's in their system. His father played baseball. Going over his bio, I didn't even realize that his father, Jeff, played baseball at Thurlow Dickinson, which is my alma mater. And here's a little bit of a trivia quiz here that I was sports director of the radio station. We used to travel around the country doing play-by-play of the basketball on the radio. I did a little bit of baseball, and I preceded Jeff being there. But the SID there in my last year was Jay Harlan, who was the longtime PR director of the Mets. And Jay was the PR director when Corey's father was at the school. I think it's so funny. And
wow.
Corey and I were talking about it because it's amazing how all these things come around in baseball that, you know, people just are intertwined.
Chris, you know more than I do. I mean, we're both paying attention to this team, but you're paying closer attention. The offense stinks, and there's no other way to say it. And that has to change, right? There's too many good hitters in this lineup for this to continue. Am I dreaming?
No, you're not dreaming at all, Allison. You hit on everything. A lot of things have to change, but you can go up and down the lineup. Start and lead off to Nart Span, actually leads the team in multi-hit games. He has shown signs of really being a catalyst. They've gotten nothing from the number three spot. That's not good. That has to improve. Brandon Belt, since making the All-Star team, really hasn't done much in the second half here, and he's going to have to pick it up if the Giants are going to do anything. Buster Posey, back and all, is showing signs of life. That's a good thing for them. Hunter Pence and Joe Panic, who were sidelined for so long, are starting to look like themselves. What they need is for them to hit their stride, hit their form, and kind of shift to this number two spot. Jose Angel Pagan, he's been, you can call it a free agent salary drive if you want. Whatever he's doing well. He's got a 15-game hitting streak, and they certainly can use continued contributions from him.
So there's a lot of one-run losses, and that can, if you're the Oakland A's from a couple of years ago, that can derail a season if you lose too many one-run games. But as frustrating as those losses are for the Giants, there's actually a little bit of optimism you can take from that because it could have swung either way. It's not like they're going out. I don't know how to phrase this, but it's not like they're going out and getting it handed to them every night, right? I mean, they're in these games, and they're just needing a couple bounces to go their way. Is that kind of the overall general theme of what's happening?
Definitely an accurate perception there, more than a perception. It's just the way it is. They're playing, and it's kind of tough. It's difficult as a writer, not that any of the listeners care, but it's difficult because it's the same game every night. They may fall behind, then come back and make it close, or they may take an early lead, squander that, but hang in there. I mean, 8 one-run losses out of the 21 losses they've suffered since the All-Star break, that's a big percentage of the defeats, the one-run games. It also reflects that, something's going wrong each night, whether it's the hitting or the pitching or the relief pitching or the defense. Something comes up to bite them each game, and they've got to, whether that's mental or physical or just baseball luck, that's another thing that has to change.
So did I read this right, that they had a stretch like this in 2014?
Yes.
Wow.
I don't think it really registered with any of us at that time. Plus, I think the All-Star break got in the way. But, you know, it was right after that they called up Joe Panik and Matt Duffy, and things started to click. They started winning. All they did was make a wild card, you know, that year. I know that there's, you hear a little bit of a disparaging tone in my voice. I still think, I mean, I think it's good. The expanded playoff system is good for baseball. I just, you know, shoot. I do think it cheapens things a little bit, though. But, I mean, they won the
wild card.
They won the wild card. They fought through all that to win the World Series. So, yeah, it's been done before. I mean, they should take a lesson. They should heed the, you know, lessons of recent history, so to speak.
Yeah, no, I think that there's just too much talent there. I just can't imagine the Giants sort of cratering in September, even though they didn't have a good September last year, so I will acknowledge that. But when you look at this starting rotation, do you think, like, this is a rotation that can really take them far? I don't know. Like, I was watching the game yesterday, and Matt Cain was doing fine until he wasn't. You know, but of course, Johnny Cueto is having a great year. Like, do you see this as a solid rotation? Like, I don't know, if you had to give them a grade, A through F, like, what would you grade them?
Oh, right now I'd grade them a C or C minus, because Cueto has not pitched well in the second half. Jeff Samardzija has not pitched all that great in the second half.
Right.
Moore has really hasn't done a whole lot. I mean, he's two quality starts out of three. I mean, that's okay, but it's not as if he set the world afire. And Matt Cain's in danger of losing his spot in the rotation, if temporarily, if not longer. But, I mean, you can kind of turn it the other way, and, you know, they're not that far off from where they were in the first half. So, it's still more potentially, yes. The rotation is still more of an asset than a liability.
Zach Greinke, what in the what in Boston? He said it was probably the only other start that he thinks might have been worse was one he had against the Diamondbacks about, 10 years ago? So what happened? What was going on there?
Yeah, that's a great question, Allison. He had a really good outing against the Mets when he first came off the DL. We talked about that and kind of, you know, gave some life to the team there, kind of set a nice little tone for their series with the Mets. And then he came out against the Red Sox, and you're thinking, you know, maybe they can avoid a sweep with a win, and it just, he just got hammered. I mean, there's just really no other way to say it, you know, only lasting an inning and two-thirds. You know, he felt like, he said, the ball was coming out of his hand really well, but that obviously they weren't good pitches because they didn't have good movement, because they were just crushing everything he threw. And it wasn't any one particular pitch. They hit a homer on a curveball. They hit a homer on a fastball. They hit a homer on one of the sliders. I mean, it was just it was a beatdown right from the start, and certainly caught everybody off guard. And it's not the way he was pitching before he went on the DL, and it wasn't the way he was pitching when he first got off the DL. So they chalk that up to one of those days and move on for his next start.
He said his stuff was flat. So
yeah, you know, and I guess pitchers have that happened to them at times. But
not Zach Greinke. Come on.
I know. I was about to say, you're not used to seeing that from Zach Greinke. So yeah. I mean, it was truly stunning. You just kind of sat there and watched it and just couldn't kind of believe what exactly was going on there.
Yeah, I just wonder. I mean, I'm not questioning his heart, his character, nothing, but I just feel like if they were in the midst of a division race, if they were making a playoff push, that, I don't know, like, it would just be different. Like, it's got to be hard in August. I don't care who you are, to go out there and really have, like, the same adrenaline rush you had in April when you thought that this thing was, you know, you had a chance. I mean, when you're so far out of the race, is it hard for these guys to get up for these games?
Well, it might be, Allison, but if it is, it, you know, I think the fact that the guys that can do it are the ones that separate themselves from everybody else, and that's why I lean to saying that's not the case with Greinke, because he's been so good for so long that the only way you get to be that good is by competing every time you're out there, regardless of what the situation is. So it's a good test for these guys at these last month and a half here as they go through it, to see who really has it within themselves to play hard day in and day out.
Okay, so moving on to other pitchers. Patrick Corbin moved to the bullpen. He had not won a start since June, and he was not good in 9 starts after that. So I guess this is, he started the season as the number 3 starter, so this has to be kind of a big blow to him and maybe needs to get his confidence back a little bit.
Yeah, you know, you look at the Diamondbacks rotation, and you talk about them being out of the race right now. They're number 2 starters in AAA, they're number 3 starters in the bullpen, and their number 4 starter, Ruby De La Rosa, is on the disabled list. So, and their number 1 starter, Zach Greinke, struggled at the beginning, then pitched great, and then got hurt. So you can kind of see why they are where they are and what the biggest issue is for them. And as far as Patrick goes, you know, he had that rough outing in Boston. Some people said his stuff looked flat and just wasn't coming out of his hand the same way. And you've kind of heard that for a while now, ever since his last victory. And it's kind of hard to pinpoint. They've looked at mechanics. The mechanics seem pretty similar. There doesn't seem to be a drastic loss in velocity. He said he's had some nerve issues, but that he thinks he's past that. So it's hard to know if that's a factor. And again, his start may have looked a lot differently had Gene Segura fielded the first hit of the game for the Red Sox, because if he does, Corbin's out of the first inning with scoreless and 11 pitches. Instead, they got 4 unearned runs, and he threw 40 pitches in the first inning, and that's just that's draining in and of itself and hard to come back from. So they're going to send him to the bullpen, have him, he pitched pretty well last night. They're going to have him just try to throw in some low-leverage situations and see if they can't rebuild his confidence a little bit and figure out what's going on with him, because he's certainly somebody that they're counting on going forward.
Okay, so I've had this other topic that I've kept in my back pocket that I was going to pull out when there really wasn't a ton to talk about when it comes to the Arizona Diamondbacks. And so now I'm bringing it out, Steve. There is a picture that is in existence of you and Michael Jordan on some sort of posing together, and it was a really long time ago because you had a lot of hair. So can you give us some specifics as to what the situation was leading up to this picture being taken? I believe it was like on a magazine cover, right?
Yeah, that was 1994, Allison, and it was a photo shoot for Phoenix Magazine, and Michael Jordan was playing in the Arizona Fall League, and I was handling his public relations for the 3 months that he was down here. So, that got reposted by somebody and always gets quite a bit of attention on my Facebook feed. But, that was an experience. I'll tell you, it was something I'll never forget, getting to spend that much time with Michael Jordan and just see somebody up close that had, you talk about a guy who brought it every day. That was a guy that never took a day off when it came to working hard. And even though baseball didn't work out for him, and he obviously wasn't a very good baseball player, he put in the time and effort, it seemed like, every day to take extra hitting, to try to learn. So his failure in baseball was certainly not for lack of trying.
AJ, I have a few questions. One, Andy Green's message to the team appears to be, pace yourself, stay in the present, and he doesn't want guys to look at what they're doing now as like a 2017 tryout. But how is it possible for these guys not to have that at the back of their minds, especially some of the young players that want to show what they can do?
Yeah, I'm sure they're all kind of viewing it that way in one sense, but I think more than anything, they're just Andy doesn't want them putting any maybe added pressure on themselves for the rest of the season. Trying 17, if you're trying to secure your roster spot, well, that's one way away. You can't really control that down the road. He's trying to keep the focus on the here and now. I mean, he's well aware. He basically spent his entire major league career competing for a roster spot, so he's well aware of what's going through those players' heads. He's just kind of trying to put them in the best position to succeed, I think.
Yeah, okay. So I'm looking at John Heyman's weekly column, and he just, like, goes in such depth with every single team. I cannot imagine how much this man has to be on texting and on the phone and writing, but that's an advantage for all of that because he throws a lot of interesting stuff out there. And one of the things that he threw out there was that Yasiel Puig might be a good organization, a good fit for the Padres. He needs a new team. I think he's worn out his welcome in L.A. I think that's putting it mildly. So these things are fun to sort of throw around and consider and make a bigger deal out of them than what they probably should be. But what do you think about that? Would that make financial sense or any other kind of sense to take a flyer on him?
I mean, I'm not so sure it would make financial sense, but I think it would. I mean, you said it would be a fun thing. It certainly would be playing each other times a year, so there would be kind of that angle to it. I don't see it maybe as much as a fit almost at all, like Heyman does. I think Padres have a lot of young outfielders who they want to give time to and kind of see who will kind of emerge from that group, and bringing in he's not a veteran exactly, but he's a guy who's kind of already proven himself and you know what he is. It might kind of clog the path for some guys like Hunter Renfro, Manny Margot. Travis Jankowski's been playing well recently. Obviously, Alex Dickerson out there, who's kind of in the same boat where he's getting his first taste this year. So I don't see that as a great fit. In terms of would it be a fun fit? Absolutely, because it would make the NL West just that much more interesting. It's already a pretty interesting division. It would add one more kind of element to the Southern California rivalry.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing, like, that the thing that's the most obvious with all this is the reason he's not with the Dodgers anymore is because he's not productive, he's got an attitude problem, and he hasn't really taken care of his body in the way that the Dodgers recommended for him to stay fit. So it's not like, I mean, there would be all kinds of, like, silly reasons why him going to a team that seems to be a cohesive, I mean, everything that you read about the Padres are at least all on the same page. The players seem to have a really good attitude, even with all the losing. So when you put that, just those factors in there alone, he makes no sense.
Yeah, and that's probably actually a bigger reason than the one I just mentioned. Obviously, they want to find playing time for all the outfielders, but they kind of don't want to get away from what the organization's doing going forward. It seems like everyone's on the same page, and obviously they've been losing, but they haven't been putting the talent on the field that you'd expect them to be in the playoff hunt right now. So they're obviously building for the future, and as an organization, talent-wise, they've got a lot of that at the lower levels, and I don't know if they want to maybe mess with that in terms of bringing in a guy who might be volatile toward the mental state of the club.
Now, looking at the sort of the international signings, the Padres spent a lot of money, and this is basically why A.J. Preller was hired to be their general manager. I think everybody knew that coming in, like when he was hired, like he basically worked magic with the Rangers, and they have to exploit that area in order to be able to not only be competitive on the major league level, but just be able to maintain, like, you know, just a moderate payroll and still win. So that's like, you know, a part of an element of, you know, I guess with a team that fans might not pay as much attention to, but certainly you as a reporter, I mean, I'm sure that you can see like what they're doing sort of cooking behind the scenes, and that has to bode well for the future.
Yeah, and everyone's really excited about the money they're spending on the international market, and it makes sense. If you look at some of the contracts they've unloaded, they basically use that money they saved internationally. I think people might be now. These are moves that aren't going to pay off for probably half a decade. So we're not going to. There's going to be no instant gratification here with the signings they're making. But they're making some pretty big signings. I want to say they have 8 of the top 30 international prospects, and they've signed somewhere around 30 overall. So that's a huge infusion into your system. And I think the one thing that you've seen within the organization is people are genuinely excited to see. What's happening at the lower level now? I know AJ Preller told me that he's more anxious than ever to kind of get his nightly reports from the coaching staffs at different levels because there's more talent than he's ever had in San Diego.
When you look toward 2017, I mean, let's just like break this down, like starting pitching, bullpen, lineup. Like, who's like one player from like each category who could be like the biggest impact player like next season, like somebody who maybe you think like might have like a breakthrough season, someone who's really built on something this year and you expect that to be carried forth, if that makes any sense? Like, is there like a starting pitcher that you think could maybe be more of an anchor next year?
That's a good question. I think I'll start by kind of going starting pitcher and hitter. I think Austin Hedges behind the plate, when he gets called up, he will impact both. He'll be he's huge influence on the pitching staff. He's been one of the best defensive catching prospects And from all reports, he knows how to handle a pitching staff extremely well. So I think he'd be kind of a major addition. In the rotation, someone to maybe look for, Brad Hand's had a fantastic year out of the bullpen. They claimed him off waivers right at the end of spring training. And he's been great out of the bullpen. There's been some talk of potentially moving him into a starting role. And from what I've seen, and this isn't an expert's opinion by any means, but he has the stuff that could turn him into a starter. He started in Miami for a little bit. He says he wants to be a starter down the road. He's a left-hander. He's got a fastball, slider, curveball, so he's got enough pitches to do that job. I think maybe he'd have to throw his changeup a little bit more, but he could be a guy that could potentially step into the rotation, because there's going to be, going into next season, there are just going to be so many spots available in the pitching staff as a whole. I don't know, maybe only a third of those spots will be definite going into camp, I think. So it'll be a wide-open race. I think maybe he could inject himself into it.
This last stretch of, I think it's 6-10, versus some tough teams in the Dodgers, the Marlins, the Rangers, the Phillies, not such a great team, and then the Nationals. So didn't really come out as they would have liked, and I guess that's disappointing just to see, you know, just in about a week and a half to 2 weeks, like how things can change just on a dime like that.
Yes, it can, although it told us something, and that's the great thing about a 162-game schedule is that your depth gets tested, your ability to withstand injuries and slumps, that gets tested. For the Rockies to have hung in this thing a little bit better, a lot more would have had to go right. But let's face it, the teams that are going to the playoffs or the teams that are really battling at this point in August, things didn't go right at times. They had key injuries or slumps, and they weren't able to recover from them. What happened with the Rockies, a lot of their bullpen, from Carlos Estevez to Jake McGee, all went into slumps at the same time, and they couldn't withstand that. Also, they had some injuries. The Trevor Story injury, it hurt them, although David Dahl came up and gave them a lift. But I think the other one that hurt was Mark Reynolds breaking the hook of the handmade in that hand, which I'm convinced is only in the body so that baseball players can break it and miss 4 to 8 weeks. Well, you know, he broke that. And suddenly you went from a pretty balanced lineup with power throughout to one that is heavily left-handed, and at times that is hurt. Also, defensively, not having Story's range, which wasn't Tulowitzki's range, but still was very good shortstop range, that hurts. And not having a real first baseman over there, they were going with Daniel Descalzo, who actually plays a lot of shortstop. It's probably the best they have at that position. They're going with him there. It really hasn't worked and panned out for them. But you know the reasons why, and you know how they're moving toward being able to withstand those things.
Yeah, so the fact that they were surging right around the trade deadline can really work against the team. It can really cloud things a lot. And I remember talking to you either the day before, I think it was, the day after, whatever it was, and it looked like the Rockies were going to stick with things. And do you think there would be any regret, like now, if this doesn't work out, you know, to maybe have not gotten caught up in things too much and still sort of thought in the future, maybe thought to 2017, or do you think that there wasn't much to do either way anyway?
Well, when they decided to try to look out there, and it was really in the hours going to the trade deadline, they were going for relief help. But here's what happened. If you look at the system and how they're replenishing with starting pitching and guys like David Dahl in the lineup and a few others that are on their way up, they couldn't afford to give those guys up. So even if they had the move, and I think that they did look at some other teams to try to get bullpen help, the question was, can we give up what we're building? Because if you look at it, it looks like over the next 2 to 3 years, they really have a lot of pitching coming and some guys that can hit. I mean, David Dahl is kind of the tip of the iceberg there, because you have Rommel Tapia, who did very well in AA, and he went to AAA and was just as effective as Dahl was. When you start looking at, can we give up guys like that in order to make up a few games to get a wild card, then I think you have to kind of step back and say, yeah, it's disappointing this year, but let's just see what these guys can do now. And maybe guys like a Carlos Estevez, or like some of the guys who are getting to play more, Christian Adames, can this experience make them better in a future year when you're really going for it? So it looked like the trade wasn't there, and because they couldn't give up what it would have required to improve that bullpen.
So looking ahead, there's some rumors maybe that they might be bringing up another stud pitcher from their system, possibly by the weekend. What do you know about this?
There's an open start on Saturday, and Jeff Hoffman would fit in quite nicely there his last time out. They limited him to 5 innings. He struck out 9, only gave up 1 hit, no runs, and he's been pitching pretty well there. He's developed a changeup, which we've talked about before. A lot of times a college pitcher doesn't really have that pitch because of the composite bat. He's developed that that very well, and it looks like a lot of people here, and I know a lot of people in the media even, are like, are you going to call up Hoffman to start against the Cubs on Saturday? And that has a lot to do with, I think, wishful thinking. People want to see that. In fact, I saw someone associated with the Cubs who walked up to me and says, oh, so you're going to bring up Hoffman on Saturday? I mean, that's the buzz around here, and it would be nice to see. After what John Gray has done, he's slumping now, but you expect that of a rookie. Tyler Anderson, he stepped in and done well. Chad Bettis, a second-year guy, has done well, overcome some slumps. Jeff Hoffman's the tip of that next group of guys. You also have Kyle Freeland, a number one pick from the city of Denver, who's in AAA, and you expect to see him before the end of the season. So even if they don't have this miracle turnaround, a lot of people aren't expecting it based on what's happened recently, there's still some excitement for the rest of the season.